5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Memorial Day weekend in 2007 was supposed to be a weekend of celebration for the Henry sisters. They traveled from New York City to Miami to see friends, family, and celebrate the younger sister's birthday. But by the weekend's end, only one of them would return home. The other, 22-year-old Steffa Henry, an aspiring lawyer, would be missing. This is her story.
Hi, I'm Vanessa.
And I'm Amy.
And you're listening to She Goes By Jane. At the end of this episode and every episode, we will be joined by a special guest who will read an original poem by Amy Baker about the women we're featuring.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Amy.
Vanessa, it has been a few weeks.
It sure has.
We've done the holidays.
We've done New Year's.
And now we're here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is our first episode of the new year. And before we get started, we're trying something new this year that I told you about like 5 minutes ago.
The book?
The book.
Okay.
So every month, Vanessa and I read a book together and call it the She Goes By Jane podcast book club.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a conversation once a month, and that is available on our Patreon for our Patreon subscribers. But I'm also adding in a little extra this month. So this month we are reading There Is No Ethan.
Right, and just so that you guys know, like, we've been alternating between fiction and nonfiction.
Yes.
So, like, this one is nonfiction, so next month will be
fiction.
Fiction.
Right. So this month we are reading There Is No Ethan, and I was in the middle of cooking dinner last night, and you started messaging me mm-hmm. because you had just started reading it. And I've read it before.
Yeah, I'm only like 100 pages in. So
yes. And you were like, I need to talk about it.
Yes.
You had feelings.
I have many feelings.
Right. About There Is No Ethan by Anna Akbari.
Yes.
And I had feelings too. So this summer I was listening to the audiobook while on my dog walks, and like literally every time I would come into the house, I would like run in and tell my husband like, this is the update about like what's happening, right? And like I could not stop listening. So I'd be like making dinner with my headphones on, like being antisocial, just had to know more. And I just, after you messaged me, I was like, oh, like other people who are hopefully joining us on this book club journey and reading Anna Akbari's There Is No Ethan will probably have the same feelings as they're reading it. And so I am going to start a Storygraph read-along for our book club selections. So you can log in and there will be a read-along for There Is No Ethan connected to my name. So that's Amy Baker, I-M-E-E. Baker, and we'll put some links in our social accounts so you can find it. And basically, as you're reading the book along with us, you can pop in there. There'll be questions, interactions, and so then.
Oh, that's very cool. I'm not familiar with that at all.
Right.
Okay. Now I know what you were talking about.
Yes.
Sorry, guys. This episode, I'm struggling. I'm getting over bronchitis, so Sorry if I sound so rough, but anyway.
But yes.
So, I sound really, yeah.
So I will, I am not sick, thank goodness.
Yet.
So I am excited to start that, and we'll put some links on our social accounts so that you can find it. And hopefully that will also be a different way to interact with the books, with what we're doing, with the She Goes by Jane book club. And so I'm excited to do that.
That is really exciting. So I did make a StoryGraph account last year when you told me about it, mm-hmm. but I can't say that I was like good at it.
Okay.
So now this is going to be like motivation for me.
To like join in.
To join in.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll connect because we are not even connected to each other on the StoryGraph. But I love StoryGraphs, like charts and graphs and statistics because
I know.
I love because a good chart.
Charts.
I love a good chart.
Spreadsheets. You must be like the Venn diagram person.
Yes, and
they make them.
They make diagrams. They there's pie charts.
The pie charts. Yes. That's what they. Yes,
pie charts.
Pie charts.
I love a pie chart. I love.
They have bar graphs.
They do have bar graphs.
All the things that you like. Yes.
It scratches that like data itch for me. So. I will be on there. My book is coming in because I listened to it on audio and I'm going to reread it again with new knowledge in place.
Were you that kid in high school that had like different colored highlighters for all your bar graphs?
Yes. Why would you not? Okay. So with that taken care of, we actually have to get into the episode. Mm-hmm. And Vanessa, this is a really heartbreaking episode for me. So this was a hard one to do.
I mean, a lot of them.
Every episode is a hard one.
Yes.
This one in particular. This one, I don't know if we've mentioned it in the podcast, but I have on our social or my social accounts talked about like basically when I do the episodes, like, and I write the poems, I have our missing persons or unidentified persons like picture up on my screen and I just keep it there so that like this is like a reminder to me of why we're doing what we're doing, who we're talking about, and why this is happening. And this woman was 22 when she went missing. And the whole time I just kept on looking at her picture and thinking about like how close in age she was to my college students. Mm. And like, you know, my college students like her are adults at that age, but also at the same time, like I always like think of them as like my like babies.
It's so funny because whenever we talk about them,
yeah,
you're always like, oh, they're adults. They can make their own decisions. They can do all of these things. But then like 2 minutes later, you're like, this one did this thing that was so cute. Yes. And like, they're just babies. So
yeah.
They're like little baby adults.
Yeah. I mean like, and so she was 22. So I was staring at her and like thinking about kids, my students, like at that age, mm-hmm. and like what they're going through. And then, you know, as I'm going through it, like her trial for her case just happened at the end of last year of 2024, since now 2025. Mm-hmm. And it happened just days before her 40th birthday. Oh,
okay. So
then I had this realization like, oh, she's 2 years younger mm-hmm. than me. And it's just like, this often happens in situations like this where I think about like where I was at 22. And where I was at 40 and like all of the things that I've been able to do, the life I've been able to live between those gaps of time mm-hmm. and it just like wrecked me basically while I was doing this. So I was just thinking of that a lot while putting this episode together. Yeah. So we're going to take some extra care with this, particularly because some of the developments in her case have happened so recently. So there's some particularly more open wounds, I think, there. I need you to first to picture 22-year-old Steffa Henry, and we're going back to 2007. But first, Steffa has already accomplished a lot by this point in her life, at just 22, right? She'd graduated from Metropolitan Corporate Academy High School in Brooklyn, which was this like school funded by Goldman Sachs under the promise they would provide mentorship and internships at their company to students. I didn't know that kind of thing existed, but it did. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Steffa took part in that program, but I do know that as soon as she graduated high school, she was admitted to the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And while there, She served as the first intern to the college president, and then when she graduated, it was in the top 5% of her class. That happened in 2006, and she had a degree in criminal justice and a minor in psychology, so she is, like, doing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she is a extremely smart and driven woman, and once she graduated, she took a job at the college's enrollment management office. Now, keep in mind that during this time, she lived at home with her parents, Sylvia and Stephen, and this was like an hour commute by train each way for her. So she's working at the college, living at home, and she's also studying for her LSATs so that she can apply for law school. Her aunt Daffodil said she always wanted to be the Lady Johnny Cochran.
Like, her name's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's a hybrid of Stephen and Sylvia?
Actually, I hadn't considered the Sylvia part, but yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is where she is in 2007, which is also the year her younger sister, Shola, turns 16. Now, I don't have a sister, and I really often envy people who have really tight sister bonds, and these two are apparently very close. Like, despite their age gap, these two spent a lot of time together. They'd go shopping, they'd talk about boys, they'd share their secrets, so they were together often. And for Shola's 16th birthday, Steffa wants to treat her sister to a birthday celebration. Steffa is known to be extremely giving and generous with her loved ones, so she, you know, she'll take her younger cousins and her goddaughter out to places like Chuck E. Cheese. She bakes them cupcakes, like, the Christmas before. She bought gifts for everyone, even, like, family members from out of state. So I get the sense that she really wants this to be a memorable occasion for her sister. So she buys them tickets to Miami.
Really?
Mm-hmm. The plan is that over Memorial Day weekend, they'll go down, they'll stay at their Aunt Carlita's apartment, you know, with her, and then they'll just kind of see the sights of Miami for her sister's birthday. So on May 24th, they depart New York City on a continental flight bound for Fort Lauderdale, and they get in around 3 p.m. and head to their aunt's apartment in Miami Gardens. Now, it's not reported on, but I feel like it's likely they spent the remainder of that day, like, and the next settling in and relaxing. On the 26th, they spend the day at their grandfather's house in Miami Gardens, and then they went to a salon to get a pedicure. And then the next day, the 27th, it's a stop at the Bicentennial Park in downtown Miami to attend the Best of the Best reggae concert. I'm like, that's not me saying.
I was wondering, it's not you?
It's not me saying it's the best of the best. That's what, like, its actual name. It's okay. The best of the best. Now, you know, going through these stories about her, it's really clear she loves music. Steffa grew up in New York City, but she was born in Trinidad and had just gone back there with her mom in February to celebrate Carnival. And her music tastes are definitely Caribbean infused. So she listens to a lot of soca and reggae, but also a lot of R&B. So the best of the best reggae concert would have been like a great way to spend your day. The next day, the 28th, she spends part of the day in South Beach and then makes arrangements with a friend, Tamara. Tamara and Steffa had grown up together. They both attended Metropolitan Corporate Academy in the late 1990s, and they're both described as charismatic and vivacious, and the two just really clicked. They met each other's families, and they were really described as, like, inseparable until Tamara's mother, Angela, decided to move her family to Florida. So despite the distance, Tamara and Steffa still kept in touch while Steffa was in college, so now with Steffa in Florida, it meant the two of them could actually spend some time together. So Tamara invites Steffa over to an evening barbecue at Angela's house in Miami Gardens. Now, while at the barbecue, the two start talking about going out that night to a club called Peppers. It's my understanding that Peppers primarily played reggae music, and this night is sort of a special promotional night for Peppers. So the two are, like, planning, they're going to go there and dance. And that's when Kay inserts himself into the conversation.
Okay, so it's never good news when somebody's, like, the initial.
Right.
And then, so they're talking at the barbecue and he just, like...
Yeah, so he's there and he just sort of, they're talking about their night and he just sort of inserts himself. So, yes, I am not using his name, which is not. Now, Kay and Steffa knew each other. Kay was married to Tamara's older sister, Kamisha, and the two had children together. And so I get the sense that Steffa and Kay knew each other even back in New York City, like before Tamara's family moved down to Florida. Now, Kay offers to drive the two of them to Pepper's that night.
So he's currently married to the sister?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if that matters, but...
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of... They've had their difficulties, you know, which I'll get into in a little bit, but yeah. Okay. So when she leaves the barbecue, Steffa heads back to her aunt's apartment to get ready. She tells her aunt of her plan. Now, Steffa and Shola need to head back to New York City the next day, but Steffa tells her aunt that she'll be back in time and she'll just sleep on the plane on the way home. So she's doing her hair, she's doing her makeup, she's getting dressed. And at around 11:30 p.m., she talks to her mom, Sylvia, on the phone. Now, Steffa's aunt, Daffodil, says that at this point in her life, Steffa was really trying to assert some independence and had been resisting her mom's desire to inquire about where she was going and who she was with for a while. And this is nothing unusual, to be clear. Like, you've got a mom momming and a now adult woman who's trying to, like, gain some independence.
I think that's perfectly normal. And, I mean, this happens... like in teen years, right? Even.
Yeah, I mean.
So it's just like, it's just the dynamic of like a mother-daughter.
Exactly, right? Where mom wants to know and daughter's like, please just stop hovering over me, right? So Sylvia was definitely asking where Steffa was going and who she was going with, but Steffa only seemed to say that a friend's brother-in-law was picking her up. And then she rushed her off the phone saying, mommy, mommy, I gotta go. I gotta get dressed.
I'm still having a weird time with the brother-in-law. Like, is the sister there too?
No.
Just like the brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Is just going to take these girls.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about it.
Because you're like, no.
Yeah. I don't know. Is it like a me thing?
It might be a you thing. Yeah. So, yeah. Like, I mean, if my brother-in-law, like, offered to drive me somewhere, I would definitely go with him. If he offered to drive you somewhere, like, I'd be like, he's cool. Like, you're good, right? Mm-hmm. So, this conversation with her mother is... the last time Sylvia would speak to her oldest daughter.
Oh, wow.
Now, a little over an hour later, at about 12:45 p.m., Steffa gets a call from Kay, and she puts him on speakerphone so that her aunt could direct him to her apartment. I get the sense that her aunt didn't know who he was because she only reported that he spoke with a Jamaican accent. So Kay picks up Steffa not long after at around 1 a.m., and somewhere in the evening, Tamara has decided not to go out. So it's just Kay and Steffa in the car.
Okay. So Tamara's not even doing it.
No.
So it is kind of a weird dynamic a little bit. Is he a lot older than Steffa?
He is, you know, like roughly calculating out here. I believe at this point he is in his late 20s, maybe early 30s.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
So the next morning around 8 a.m., Steffa's Aunt Carlita realizes that she's not back at the apartment. And the reporting doesn't make this clear, but I assume she tries calling Steffa on her cell phone and she's not getting an answer. At around 9:30 a.m., Shola calls her parents back in New York City and she says that Steffa didn't come home. So Sylvia starts calling and calling, calling Steffa's phone, but it's just going to voicemail. Now, meanwhile, at around 10 a.m., when they can't get a hold of her, Carlita does call the police and lets them know about this disappearance.
It's terrifying just in the sense that it's terrifying because she's mm-hmm. missing. But like with them being between New York and Florida, it's putting her mom in this situation.
Right.
Where it's really hard to like get a handle on things quickly.
Yeah.
And then her sister's kind of stranded. She's only 16.
She's 16, right? Like, you know, thankfully they had been staying with the aunt. But like, you know, as a mom, this also means that like... there are just so many miles distance between you and, like, direct action.
Right. Your daughter's missing. Your 16-year-old is far away from you right now.
Yeah.
Like, her world must have just fallen apart.
Like, you can't just, like, get in the car and, like, just, like, drive around looking for her or anything like that, right? So it does take until May 31st for Sylvia and Steven to manage to get down to Florida because that's the other thing. It's like, you've got to travel.
Right.
To get there, right? So they're there to look for... Steffa themselves, but it's now been 2 days by the time they get there and no one has heard from her. Now, I can't find a news article about Steffa's disappearance until June 2nd. So that's a good 4 days after she was last seen. At that point, the, you know, reporting is a little bit unclear because there's so many unknowns in her disappearance. They knew that she was heading to a nightclub, but they weren't certain if she had even arrived at that point. And at that point, the man was listed as unknown, and they believed he might have been driving a dark-colored sedan, possibly an Acura. So we know that she got into a car with Kay.
Mm-hmm.
But for everyone else, they're like, who was she with, right?
No, and it took that long for anything to really...
For reports to start making...
To be clear, Steffa is a person of color.
Yes.
Do you think that had an impact in that?
I always think that does.
Like, without a doubt, right?
Yeah.
That's, like, what I'm thinking while you're saying it.
Mm-hmm. Now, news is slowly trickling out about her disappearance. So news really trickled out very slowly about her disappearance. And it's going to be like much later that the investigative path starts to make sense. So I'm going to try to arrange this chronologically. And some of it is known, like what was known then is different than what's known now, if that makes sense. So one of the first early questions seemed to be if Steffa maybe went missing intentionally. And this is not something anyone in her life is entertaining. Her friend, Melissa, who grew up with her, said that she would not have run away and that she was always like the mommy of the group, the responsible one.
It doesn't seem like she ran away. She had so much going on. She was on like a trip with her sister.
Yeah.
If she was running away, she wouldn't have even brought her sister.
Like who? Yeah.
Who would
doesn't even
that,
make any
you know?
Sense, right?
No.
And so for Sylvia and Steve, they're like literally they're down in Florida. They're like handing out flyers. They're canvassing neighborhoods. But after 2 weeks of this, Steven actually has to return to his job in New York City where he built transit trains. I just think of like the injustice of this just at its core that like your child could be missing and then like. But there's like bills to pay.
You gotta go back to
work.
You
gotta go back to work.
Yeah.
People expect you at work. Right?
It's awful.
Now, Sylvia, though, she is able to take a leave of absence from her job at JP Morgan Chase in Manhattan. And this is an indefinite leave. And her plan, she says, is to stay in Florida until she can find her daughter. Meanwhile, police are trying to figure out any information they can about her disappearance. Now, Vanessa, I don't know how many clubs you went to in your early 20s.
So I grew up in Canada, so my clubbing happened in my teens.
I don't know how many clubs you went to in your early teens, mid-teens, late teens?
Late teens.
Late teens.
Not many. One in particular that's like the worst one anyone can go to.
Right.
Looking back on it, I'm like, you probably know which one I'm talking
yes.
about. Yeah.
Because I also went there.
It's so bad. Was it not so bad?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now.
So how many did you go to?
So... I have to be clear, going out to clubs is one of my least favorite things to do. And that is even true in my 20s when, like, clubbing was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Steffa and I are close to same
right.
age.
Right. So at that age, I had my photography business already.
Yeah. No.
So I was like, I was in a committed relationship with a house and a business. So
yeah.
22, I was no longer clubbing. But
I was in college and then grad school. And so that was like a lot of people in my program would want to go clubbing. But like, to be clear, I do not ever want to be out of my house after 7 p.m. And that was like when I was in my 20s too. Like,
So Amy now is Amy then?
Yes. I want my cozy clothes and I want to be, no, I am done peopling at that time. Now, one thing I can remember from this time period is that like one of the big things would be like promotional teams would go to clubs and they would be like third party marketing things and they mm-hmm. would be taking photos and videos that the clubs could use after. It was like a very big thing.
It was. It was like a celebrity thing too. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember celebrities at the time doing that. Like, and I thought it was so strange, like being invited to a club so you can dance so they can photograph you.
Yes. Yes. So having these like film crews, video crews there that was part of that clubbing culture. I don't know if it still is because it would require me to go out.
To go to the club?
After 7.
Yeah.
And unlike my 20s, I am now very firm in like I don't want to be outside. Thank you.
We'll be back in a moment.
Peppers was one of those clubs that had a promotional team. So to set the scene a little bit so that you can understand what kind of Peppers was like, it was in a strip mall between a cash checking place and an all-ages preschool.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
what?
This is actually something like when I moved to Arizona that I was like, what the heck? Because you would have these like strip malls and they would have like the weirdest collection.
Like the nightclub is right next to the all ages preschool.
Yeah. Right. Like
how many ages are in that preschool?
I have no idea. That's just what they called it, an all ages preschool.
It's got to be a cutoff.
It can't really be all ages right now. So it's not the only club in the area. There's another one called Sophia's Ballroom nearby. And it's basically this like, you know, this it's an eclectic mix of businesses. And Peppers was known for playing Caribbean music and the club wanted to promo their business. Now, first, investigators, they had to figure out where she was. So they looked at her cell phone records and they know the phone pinged a tower less than a mile from this club. So they know at least she had been in this area. And looking into it further, they're able to spot her in one of the promotional photos or videos that was done at Peppers that night. So she's wearing the same black dress over a white shirt that she left her aunt's apartment in, and she's carrying this brown clutch. I actually find it really distressing to see this photo of her from that night because, like, I know what's...
If you didn't know, though, would it just seem like any other picture?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's... She's kind of standing to the side, and honestly, she looks rather unimpressed with where she is. You know, like, she's just kind of, like, standing, like, loosely there. And so, like, yeah, like, I think if you didn't know it was going to happen, it would just look like... basic club photo. I don't think it would be used in their promotional stuff because she honestly she just doesn't look like she's having a great time.
It's like not exciting enough.
Well, yeah, she just is not looking like she's having fun. But for investigators, this like becomes like an important clue, right? Now they're able to determine that her voicemail was checked at 4:13 a.m. and I'm guessing this is the action that pinged the cell phone tower. So this helps them firm up her whereabouts after she left her aunt. So she did make it to the club. That question is answered. On June 7th, Miami-Dade Detective Roy Rutland announced that they were looking for the driver of a dark-colored Acura Integra that picked her up from her aunt's house, but they really declines to say much else about her case. But someone who is speaking out is her mom, Sylvia. She has set up headquarters basically at Carlita's apartment. She's sleeping in the same room Steffa slept in when she was there. In fact, Steffa's suitcase was where she left it in the corner of the room. On the dining room table, there are two photos of Steffa next to an open Bible and candles and a prayer card. And so Sylvia begins her day the same way every day. She wakes up and she says a prayer. After that, she calls her family in New York City because Steven's there holding down things and looking after Shola. And then she calls the Miami-Dade detectives to get an update on any progress that's being made. After that, she then begins to make calls and having appointments with anyone who can get the word out about her daughter, like places like CNN's America's Most Wanted and TV and radio and newspaper. Because there's really something critical about Steffa's case that absolutely needs as much national and like attention as possible. And that's Memorial Day weekend is one of Florida's busiest tourist weekends. That means a lot of people who may have been in the area, who may have even been at the club that weekend, could be like anywhere now. So if they headed home, it's possible they could have taken with them information about Steffa and not even be aware of her disappearance, right? But even though Steffa's case did get some national news attention, there's stark contrast to how other women's stories were being covered at the same time. For example, David Ovell, who had been covering her case for the Miami Herald, wrote on his blog that he was asked to speak about her on MSNBC. Now, he said he rushed to the studio, got set up, and then the interview was canceled just before he was set to go on. The reason they canceled is they decided to run a piece about a new angle they were taking on a Paris Hilton story about some traffic violations she'd received.
That's why it got canceled?
Yeah, so Steffa's story gets bumped because they're like, oh, we've got something else to say about Paris Hilton.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, Sylvia said that she was told by reporters that they could cover the story if there were new developments. But without that, there just wasn't a story there. And this is around the time that you start to see articles about Steffa framed in a way that addresses missing white woman syndrome. And I think some attempt to keep her story out there, like, was being made while also calling attention to how Black women's stories are covered. So to recap for those who are new to this discussion, the term was coined by PBS journalist Gwen Ifill and is meant to capture the disparity between how white women and women of color are covered in news outlets. There are clear, measurable differences with white women getting more coverage. So for example, Steffa's disappearance was compared to the 2005 disappearance of Natalie Holloway. Now, Holloway's story had been in the news constantly and continued to be in the news even when there were no new developments in her case. So when comparing the two, there's like this automatic disparity between them. Like Holloway is getting tons of national attention and Sylvia is being told that for Steffa to get any coverage at all, there needs to be developments in her case.
And as anybody can like say who at any point, you know, like was around during Natalie Holloway's disappearance, we all know what she looks like. Mm-hmm. Even like you just say the name and we immediately know what she looks like.
Exactly.
Do we know what Steffa looks like?
Yeah, like
so I mean, you know, I might not have ever seen a picture of her before.
Exactly.
Right. I probably haven't, right?
Because her case was just not getting the same amount of coverage, right?
Right.
And so I was thinking about it, cuz I was like thinking about what Sylvia was told, like, oh, the story needs to have new developments for mm-hmm. it too. And I often get frustrated when the news story is about like missing white woman syndrome and not actually about like just the case itself. It's like we like outline what the problem is, but like we don't make these like means to correct it, right? But then at the same time, like, this actually gave them a way to get Steffa's story back into it. But then at the same time, like, Steffa's story should just be out there.
Right. And that's the thing. I don't think either of us are saying that Natalie Holloway should not have had the coverage she had.
Exactly.
What we're saying is Steffa should have also had the same coverage.
Exactly. Yes. And the bar is different for their stories.
Right.
Okay. So what the public is actually not aware of is that there actually have been developments in Steffa's case. They're just not necessarily making it into the public, and this actually seems to be an investigative tactic. Now, first, on June 5th, Kay is pulled over for a traffic violation while he's driving a rental car.
Hmm.
This traffic violation is actually used as a way to bring him in for questioning. So first, he denies even knowing Steffa.
He denies knowing her, and he's in a rental car?
Mm-hmm.
So what happened to...
We're going to get there.
Where are we getting there?
We're going to get there. Now, so he denies knowing her, and this is an obvious lie. It's easily disproven because they're like, hey, we have cell phone records that prove you two were in contact that night.
And friends and family members and barbecue full of people. Like,
exactly.
Come on.
Now, he says, okay, fine. I do know her. But then he avoids saying that he was at Pepper's. And they're like, funny, because you're in those promotional photos.
Nice. So he was in the photo?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he tried saying, like, he did see her there, but he didn't give her a ride.
Yeah, but he gave her a ride.
Yeah. So eventually he does admit that the Acura Integra wasn't his and that it's his friend's car.
Okay.
And he says this man is named Pedro Joseph, and he's from San Antonio, and that the car had been returned to Pedro. But then detectives are like, okay, well, how can we get in touch with Pedro? And he, like, cannot give them an answer.
Is there even a Pedro?
Kind of.
We find him after?
Sort of.
Okay.
Now, none of this is announced at the time. They don't even announce Kay's name publicly. They just simply say that they've spoken to him, and he's not a suspect. What will become apparent later is that he is indeed still a suspect.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah. But on the surface, it doesn't appear much is happening in this case. For Sylvia, the summer passes. She's continuing to search Florida for her daughter. Eventually, Steffa's 23rd birthday comes and goes in September. But by November, Sylvia returns back to New York without her oldest daughter. Just before Christmas, the family does an interview. The year before, their house had been filled with family and music and Steffa's laughter. She had always kind of lent, like, a silly air to their house, like singing while cooking or running into her parents' room to jump on the bed to wake her father up. She was, like, also incredibly thoughtful. Like, they'd often, like, cook stir fries together, her and her dad. And so she, like, bought him a wok in, like, recognition of their, like, time that they spent together. So without her and with her still missing, the family planned on a quiet holiday and they really weren't up for their usual celebrations. And at this point, at times they still held out hope that she was still alive, but the very real possibility that she wasn't was just ever present in their thoughts. On January 15th, 2008, 7.5 months after Steffa disappeared, New York City police, accompanied by detectives from Miami-Dade, moved in on a Nissan Maxima parked at the Canarsie Pier in Brooklyn. Inside, Kay was asleep in the vehicle, surrounded by his clothes, blankets, lotion, baby wipes. Like, it's a weird assortment of things, and he is asleep.
He is living in there, right?
He is living in there. They knocked on the window, and when he opened the door, they placed him in handcuffs. Shortly after, Kay was charged with second-degree murder and evidence tampering in the disappearance of Steffa Henry. To get how they came up with these charges, you'd first have to understand the steps they took to kind of piece this all together. During the summer and fall into early winter, investigators had kept working on the case. One of the key things they wanted to do is locate the Acura Integra that Kay had been driving the night that witnesses, including Steffa's aunt, saw Steffa getting into. Now, Kay's ex-wife was key to finding this vehicle. Now, remember, she's the sister of Steffa's friend, Tamara. Her name's Kamisha, and Kamisha and Kay had a long and complicated relationship. Though they had two children together, by 2005, things between them were rocky. Kamisha had tried to end things with him, but her mother, Angela, said that he'd started stalking Kamisha. He'd refused to accept that their relationship was over. She even took out a temporary restraining order on him. So to kind of understand the dynamics of this relationship and, you know, what kind of guy this is, like, for instance, in May 2005, Kamisha woke up at 5 a.m. one morning to find him in her home, and he'd broken into her home.
Okay.
And according to police reports, he was there asking her for money. And she said, like, basically this break-in was after a series of events where it seemed like he was trying to scare her. But despite this increasingly erratic behavior, he pleaded down the original simple stalking, burglary, and resisting arrest charges to just a trespassing charge and was fined $26.
For real?
Yeah. Now, Angela, Tamara's mother, she said that by 2007, when Steffa went missing, she did not want this man around her or her family. And he wasn't allowed at Angela's home, not even in her driveway. She said there was no way she would have let Steffa go anywhere with that man, given his behavior. But one thing, Angela wasn't home the night of the barbecue. After Steffa went missing, though, Kamisha, she ends up telling investigators that Kay was lying about the Acura Integra. She said he actually did own the Acura and that he had purchased it in Brooklyn. He frequently bought cars to fix up and resell and often bought them from a place called J&M Auto Sales. This allows police to go to J&M's owner, Clive, and he did remember selling the car to Kay. Well, kind of, sort of. You see, like, the car was a 1995 dark gray Acura Integra that had been Clive's personal car. He said that when he sold it, Kay came in with a man named Pedro Joseph, and it was Pedro who ended up buying the car for, like, $700 or $800. Clive said he signed over the title, and then the two men left. And Clive, he kept good records, so he still had the VIN number of the Acura on record.
So there really was a Pedro?
Kind of.
Kind of. Oh my God.
Okay, so police are able to track down Pedro, which is not his real name at all. His name is Lester, and he is a truck driver out of Miami who frequently did a Florida to New York route. He told police that he had purchased the car, but the whole thing had been kind of weird. Kay had asked him to buy the car. Kay would give him the money, but it would have to look like Pedro, or rather Lester, was the one who made the purchase. I'm not sure why there's all this.
Why is this, like, is he, like, thinking ahead on?
I have no idea. What is this? It's, like, all very weird, and I'm not sure why, if he frequently bought cars, that he would go to these lengths to kind of hide that he owned this car. Now, Lester said that he did see Kay driving this car around Memorial Day in Florida, but not long after the holiday weekend, he called Lester and said he needed to sell the car. Apparently, Kay kept trying to sell this car all summer. He even brought it back up to New York. Another guy in the auto business said there was people who were talking about it in the neighborhood that summer, that Kay had this car that he wanted to sell quickly. But this guy said, everyone knows if you want to sell a car fast, like there's got to be a reason and none of it's good. So no one was biting. No one's buying this car. The car ends up back in Florida and a man sees it for sale. He tells his friend Jill about it. And they both thought the old owner, Clive, still owned it because his name was still on the title. But in this process, the VIN number is documented. This helps the police locate the vehicle in Jill's possession. I mean, this is a 13-year-old car at this point. So, like, it seems pretty rough. Like, there are some notable issues, like the headrests have been pulled off the front seat. Police said when they inspected the car, it smelled noticeably of chemicals. The car seemed to have been cleaned with bleach or another chemical because there was a stain on the carpet on the front passenger side, like a bleach stain. But when they pulled up the carpet and peeled back the seat fabric, there was a large amount of blood on the floorboard and beneath the fabric of the passenger seat. Additionally, there was some blood on the seatbelt, and investigators would later say the amount of blood on the seatbelt was inconsistent with a minor wound.
None of this seems surprising.
No.
But part of me feels like he was buying the car with the intent of doing something like this.
I don't get like what exactly his plan was. Like if Kamisha says he bought cars all the time to fix up right. and sell, like why did he go through these like weird lengths with this, right? Now, Dr. Emma Liu, the associate medical examiner, reviewed the evidence, included that the blood on the seat showed that whoever had been sitting there had been struck or stabbed or injured in the upper back, lower neck, or head areas, and that this caused the person to bleed quite profusely. With this blood evidence, they did a DNA comparison to Steffa's mother, sister, and father, and it was a match. So the blood in the vehicle was Steffa's, and it was likely the Acura is where she was killed. And then using cell phone data, they were able to locate Kay in New York City at the pier, and that's why they arrested him there. So despite the case being a case without a body, which we've talked about in the past, mm-hmm. the difficulties with that, everyone did feel quite confident that this case would be tried and Kay would be convicted. With Kay's arrest and the evidence in the car, Steffa's family was hopeful that they would finally have information about where Steffa was. Like, it was the utmost importance that they be able to bring her home. But that's far from what happened. Though Kay was arrested in January 2008 and extradited to Florida several months later, the case hits a few roadblocks. It's unclear exactly what happened based on the news reports at the time, but in 2015, so 7 years later, the case was expected to go to trial. It would be another 9 years after that, though, and that it would.
So this all seemed like super clear cut. Why 16 years?
This is like one of the most absurdly long delays that I've seen. And this, I cannot imagine waiting that many years for justice for Steffa, the weight that her family must have endured. Now, there's only vague mentions about why this happened. But one of the issues is that no one could say for certain where the murder took place beyond inside the Acura. So you're dealing with like cross-jurisdiction issues, like whose case is it? In 2016, we know there was a change of venue to Broward County, and because this was sought, but why the additional delays, why it took all of this amount of time, I'm not sure. That's why it was September 19th, 2024, just days before Steffa would have turned 40, that the trial began. The prosecutor opened with, whatever happened in that car was violent and led to her death at the hands of the defendant. And then he worked through the case. Particularly striking is that during the questioning of Kay, after his arrest, Kay said, if I tell you what happened, I will never see my son again.
Doesn't he have two kids?
He does.
There's so much wrong with that sentence.
Yes. Right. You know, meanwhile, Steffa's family has not been able to see her.
Right.
The defense argued that this case was rife with reasonable doubt and that his client was a convenient person to accuse. One of his main arguments seemed to be that Steffa's aunt said the man who spoke on the speakerphone with her the night of Steffa's disappearance spoke with a Jamaican accent and that his client was from Grenada. I mean,
would most people know?
I just like the fact that that's your defense, but
come on.
Yeah. And so despite the defense apparent confidence, the defense lawyer declined to call any of their own witnesses in this case. Days later, the trial ended and the jury debated for just 1 hour before bringing back their guilty verdict. At sentencing, Sylvia and Shola were able to speak about the impact Steffa's disappearance has had on their family, the ways in which they felt her loss through every moment of their lives. And now, all these years later, they still do not know where Steffa is. Kay has not, to my knowledge, revealed information about her through public channels at all. Like, I really refuse to believe that in these years he has not shared information with anyone. So my plea here is that if anyone has any information about Steffa's whereabouts, please come forward. Whether Kay shared something with you or you witnessed something that night, she's really deeply loved by her family and they deserve to have her home. And I really want to end with Shola's words because I think this speaks to who Steffa was. At the sentencing, when she had a chance to speak, Shola said, "All she wanted to do was be a person that made the world better."
Confessional. Steffa Henry, 22, missing since May 29th, 2007, from Miami, Florida. Listen, the ache of this night will sound like a metronome. The cruelty machine ticking off seconds that should have been crafted into memories. There's no language for this suffering, this violence cut into a humid Florida night, where bodies spun so fast you could feel like they defied gravity. Do not linger in these dark hours. Hold tight to the beat of the train tracks, the steady rhythm of lipstick glossing over lips, the music of laughter where song becomes prayer.
For more information about our show or to check out other shows on the network, please visit evergreenpodcast.com. Bye, Vanessa.
Bye, Amy.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. And when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.